Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
And indeed, welcome. Actually, this is hour number four, when you get right down to it, because we started at 8 o'clock.
Just hour number two on this show.
Well, that's right. This is our second hour. We're here every day, every Saturday on 570 KVI from 10 until noon. And so this is our second hour here on KVI. Now, we had Dr. Dan Nelson at 8 o'clock, but it wasn't until 9:15 that the transmitter was working. So, yes. So I asked Dan if he would come back. We had a great hour. Oh, and by the way, Dan, you made a good point. That first hour, which virtually nobody heard unless you were online, those listening online heard it. But, you know, most people listen on the radios. Is in podcast form and will be up on our website, lmclinic.com, starting probably tomorrow. Oh, no, Monday probably. So I asked Dan, thank you. Nice to have you back in the studio. We've never done it this way before, having you come, go, come, and what have you.
It's okay.
But then we have Dr. Michael Gilbert, who is still here, supposedly, from 10 to 11. But I've got another caller who has a question for you.
Great.
Dr. Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute. For all of those who are just now tuning in, Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho, dealing with pain. Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute, dealing with guess what?
So if they've got a problem, boy, someone in the room can fix it.
That's right. And then, and we still got, obviously, Dr. Jerry Mitchell.
Yeah, bringing up the rears.
You've had your fair share today. You've been busy.
Yeah.
So let us go to Al in Federal Way. He has possibly an interesting question. Al, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Al.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Gilbert, just a question for you. My son is a commercial pilot, and he has been noticing that his eyes starting to have some dry eyes. And you were on, I think, about first week of January talking about the glands of the eye.
Yes.
And I was just questioning what do you think could be going on? And I don't know if you have many commercial pilots in your practice.
I do.
Any other type of problems?
Typically, they come to me for surgery, but I have a lot of stewardesses who have severe dry eyes. So, you know, the pilots, we have to fix their dry eyes before we can do surgery. So first, you know, the core of this is commercial and non-commercial aircraft are one of the driest places on Earth. It is the humidity is lower than the desert. And that's where they live all the time.
So why is that? The ventilation?
It's high altitude.
Yes.
And altitude. That,
the air outside, if you ever look at your little, your flight thingy,
yeah.
It says it's 40 degrees below zero out there.
Got it.
Okay. And cold air can't hold moisture.
Yeah.
And so it's extremely dry.
And since they're processing that through the cabin, you're constantly being bathed in that dry air. And then to help with the airflow, and now with COVID, we all turn on our vents, and not only do you have the low humidity, but then you have increased airflow. Right. So the evaporation component of two of those going together, low humidity, high airflow, is going to really stress the surface of the eye. And what that does then is it requires a robust layer on the first layer that light hits is not the eyeball itself. It is the secretions coming from the meibomian glands. And if those are not robust, then the surface of the eye will dry out, and the result is you lose the quality of the image. So the most common reason for whether, you know, it's anyone who works in that environment all the time, 90% of patients who have any kind of difficulty, fluctuation in vision, fluctuation in comfort, it's related to failure of those meibomian glands that we've talked about in the eyelid. And so the real answer to your question is, first of all, he needs to have them checked to make sure they're in good health, that they're still there, because oftentimes people who spend a lot of screen time or have heredity issues with this can have permanent loss or be losing those glands. So first we have to make sure they're there and functional, and then make sure that they're doing their job. And so that would be my first thought as to what's going on with them.
And the other problem, too, is with commercial pilots. They're flying the computer.
Yes.
They are not staring out the windshield. There's not much out there at 40,000 feet, especially at night. You're looking down at the computer screen. Hour after hour after hour. And that computer screen means you're not blinking.
One of the most remarkable pieces of data from a simple study is that normal blink rate and those glands release a pulse of tears to the surface of the eye every time you blink, but only when you blink. And normal blink rate is 12 to 20 times as we're sitting here every minute. On the computer, on screen time, whether that's cell phone or the computerized equipment in the cockpit, goes as low as 2 times a minute.
From 12 to 20 down to 2.
So if we go from 20 to 2,
grief.
And the worst part, the most challenging part of those glands, based on our contemporary society's drive toward increased use of screens, is that those glands live and die by the old adage, if you don't use them,
you lose them.
You lose them. And so that's why I see patients in their 20s and 30s, and I have a small group of intense gamers in their late teens with permanent gland loss. Mm-hmm. Based on that intense, you don't want to miss anything, because whether it's a fluctuation in the left aileron or it's, you know, the teenager who's afraid someone's going to come around the corner and take him out, you don't blink. Because it's an interruption in data flow back to the brain.
Yep.
So you're intense.
The issue, you know, you've got one of my senior staff, is only in his 40s. I saw you recently and had just tell me he had about 50% loss of his glands.
It is one of the most eye-opening things. This is so hard for someone like the individual you're talking about who's young, 30s, 40s. And I have to show them the gland loss.
Yeah.
I show them what it should look like, and I show them a picture of theirs, and I say, here's the reason that you're having problems. And many of my colleagues are awakening to this, but they're not into imaging it and concerned about fixing it.
And I know he was quite shocked, you know, and saying, wow, I want to do everything I can.
So if you have dry eye symptoms and they told you, just take some drops, this is disappointing to me.
Well, nice of you to say it that way. I would not have said stupid comes to mind and a few other things.
But take some drops is exactly what we were learning about 45 years ago in residency.
Of course.
That is the whole idea. Here's a point I want to make right now, and I think I know the answer. I hope I don't embarrass myself. I went in for an exam, 2-3 months ago.
Yes.
Again, it was time. And I had minor issues, and you got me some new lenses. Here they are with that stuff on them.
Yes.
Whatever.
Blue blocker.
I love them. Okay. But you did a couple of tests that you hadn't done just a year ago or, you know, a year and a half ago or so. That was just really very interesting, where you measured those glands because you didn't. So how many of you ophthalmologists out there are doing that new test?
And photographing them.
And
showing them to the
patients. And showing them to the patients so that, for example, that person you were just referred to, one of our executives around here.
Well, I'd like to say the percentage is growing. But
no, I want to know.
But it is so much easier. Patients want to hear what drop should I use.
Yeah.
And as you have said so many times, you know, how much time are we allotted for patients as practicing physicians? Not so much. So it's much easier to say, here are my three favorite drops. If these aren't working for you, come on back.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Take an aspirin.
Then hoist me another. Right. Hoist me another copay. And so my administration, the people who help me with the business part of the practice, say, you can't sit there and talk to them about their stupid glands so long.
Okay.
But if I don't motivate
answer
them.
Answer my freaking question.
It ain't a big number, Pete.
Okay. Not enough.
It ain't a big number, Pete.
He's too diplomatic. That's the
why do you, you know, you guys have been hammering me all day long.
So
with
here's
tough
the
questions.
Deal. Here's the deal, folks. And Al, thank you so much for your call and your question. That was a very good
one. I would love to see your son, by the way. I have a lot of pilots, and I think we understand this disease extremely well and can help him as well or much better than the average.
What are those? Mylovian?
Meibomian.
Meibomian. Well, I was Meibomian in plant. The neighborhood, but...
Well, you got the my right.
I got the my.
Sounds like a Star Wars character.
Okay. It is.
So, listen... Dr. Michael Gilbert, thank you for coming in today. Thank you for staying a little bit longer.
Actually, before he leaves, I got one more question for him.
Oh, boy.
Be that way.
Just for fun.
Okay, good.
And this is from one of my adopted daughters.
Okay.
I have a couple of adopted Korean children.
Yes.
Okay. You know, I did total of 7 by birth and 2 by adoption. And she is Korean, and like many Koreans, has that very broad, flat face.
Yes.
Almost no nose that sticks out. Doesn't have your big Roman nose, you know, that is prominent. Says, look at me, I'm an emperor.
Yes.
It's a patrician nose.
Oh, my gosh.
But she needs glasses.
Yes.
And finding glasses that fit a broad face with small noses, those almost flat Asian Korean noses, is difficult. You know, I heard you talk about frames and trying to get the axis right.
It is so critical and a challenge with the Asian face. I will tell you, I have one secret advantage.
Yes?
Is I have 2 Asians who run my optical in Bellevue.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And so not only do they make sure that I have an inventory that addresses this, who could be better at fitting than someone who just
has lives the same problem.
Exactly, who lives exactly the same.
Yeah, because she's saying, I went to the optometry department and they only had 2 glasses that would even fit my head.
Right.
And they're ugly.
I promise you that's not our problem.
I'm looking at your red and
sporty,
blue.
Right. Sporty. And I don't really need these, but it's the only way I can look cool.
I see. Well, and they do look.
Sometimes
you
have to stretch.
And sometimes you come in with red glasses.
Yeah.
Well, these have a red trim.
These are red and
everywhere.
Blue.
Some are reversed and they're highlighted with blue. What have you. It's always fun to see who's going to walk in the door.
Fashion, right. Fashion forward when it comes to eyeglasses.
I try. And actually, Dan came in dressed in colors, and so this is the closest I can get.
So, folks, if you would like the best, and as one of our previous callers, who was that? Was that Bonnie? Yes, I think it was Bonnie, who said... He's just so impressed with your staff. When I was at your Northwest Vision Institute in Bellevue, picking up my new lenses and picking up also for my wife, as we walked down and got in the elevator and left, she said, their staff is so nice. Oh, my golly, your staff. All of your staff, by the way, all of your assistants and what have you, wonderful people. And you may as well get the best, basically the same cost, right? Is that generally true?
It is. We're competitive, and many of our services are price controlled by the insurance companies that we work with.
So why don't you get the best? It literally makes a whole lot of sense. Here's the number to call if you'd like to make an appointment with Dr. Michael Gilbert. his offices at clinics, Northwest Vision Institute, Bellevue, and Totem Lake. Not too far apart, Kirkland,
no.
Bellevue. All right, here's the number, 425-450-2020.
And if you're part of our 14% of the population in this area that is Asian, you can get glasses that'll fit at his
and
shop.
Not a small matter. Or we do surgery so you don't need those darn things.
Oh, that's even
better.
Well,
even better. I mean, isn't that the case? Isn't that the truth? Okay, 425-450-2020. And with that, I bid you farewell.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Always a great joy. What a great, great service to the community.
Hi to Colleen.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll see you soon. All right. And that takes us right back to Dr. Dan Nelson. Are you tired of seeing me today?
Or no, not at all.
Okay. Good seeing you, Michael. Thank you. We have some stuff for you right outside the door there. All right. Folks, if you are dealing with pain, he was in this morning. He was supposed to be here from 8 to 9. You were. Thank you.
I was present. Yes.
And we did the show.
And we had a good time.
And we had a great...
It was a great hour.
It was
very few people heard us, but we had a great time.
Well, the only people that heard us that were listening on their computers.
Oh, okay.
Online.
Okay.
Those heard us, which is probably a tenth of the audience.
And I don't understand. Radio service or reception over here on the east side is not all that great.
It really isn't.
The transmitters are on the other side of the lake, most of them.
Right.
And I have advocated for years that people go to the radio station and download the app.
Yeah.
It's free.
Their website.
Yeah. And you put it on your cell phone, you put it on your iPad, you put it on whatever, and you can get high quality digital response from this radio show anywhere on earth.
That's right.
That there happens to be a Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah, exactly. And the only reason I brought the podcast, I enjoyed that hour so much, and then to find out hardly anybody here, yeah. I was like, hey, people, just go and listen under the podcast.
We will, for the sake of us, we may be a little repetitive then, because I was so impressed with it. Some of the information was so good that there may be some repetition, but not many people will know. So bottom line is, Dr. Dan Nelson, if you're new to the show, maybe you just tuned in. This is something we have to remind ourselves. I have to remind myself all the time that we have a changing audience and a growing audience. So there's always new people. And shockingly, many of them don't know who you are, Dan. And even though you've been a somewhat regular guest for 3, 4, 5 years here on this show. And so why don't you do something that you haven't done for a year or two? Make it really brief, like 1 or 2 minutes. Give us just a little bit of your background and your training.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'll try to make it concise. I went to... undergrad, UW, local product group in Tacoma, went to USC for medical school, Southern California, did my residency in anesthesiology, put people to sleep. Even though I like talking to people, it's like, well, I don't get to talk to them.
The court poisoner, actually. You poison them into unconsciousness, but then you bring them back.
Right, exactly. Well, that's what the French call it. They call it the reanimation.
Yeah.
You know, basically, you know, we're killing you, but they were bringing you back to life. But I did my friends thought I was crazy at the time because I stayed on to do a fellowship in pain medicine.
Good.
And I was historically the very first what they called pain fellow at USC LA County.
Really?
Okay. So that's, you know, they can't take that away from me because I was
number one.
Number one.
I was number one. So it was a brand new field at that time. And what I've said before is, you know, I learned some very important fundamentals there, but the rate of change of information, explosion of information in the field of pain medicine is literally just an exponential curve. And the, you know, it's hard enough to keep in medicine in general. I feel sorry for the general practitioner, the family doctor, because in my own specialty, it's like, okay, how do I keep, you know, I'm reading all the time. I read every day. I read articles every day. I know Dr. Mixon does the same thing. But we have such an amazing toolbox, and I it's just the best word I can use. Bottom line, what I did then is kind of rudimentary. That we had a Model T back then. Now we got the Ferrari. I mean, that's really how it's changed dramatically, in a very exciting field.
You mentioned toolbox. So let's dig just a little bit deeper into that. When people listening right now, if they have a bad knee, I mean, it's a bad knee. They tend to go to doctors who get referred to a surgeon. And the surgeon, for the most part, has a very, very, very dinky toolbox with one tool. Right. And they look at you. Yeah. They're a hammer, and you look like a nail, pal.
Well, you're right. Either a surgical candidate or you're not.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you're not a surgical candidate, you take an anti-inflammatory, and you wait.
And or you go to physical therapy.
Oh, you're told first, physical therapy, always. So, but you, on the other hand, your toolbox is really quite large. Tell us about that toolbox.
Well, we have everything from very simple things. We do in a full evaluation, which includes a physical exam, ordering diagnostic imaging, including x-rays, MRIs, CTs if we need it, and basically getting, synthesizing that diagnosis, right? Because really the whole key about interventional pain medicine is precision diagnosis, because people come in the door and they say, well, I got chronic low back pain. My doctor said I got chronic low back pain. That's all there is to it. That's a beginning conversation. We need to know what is causing the back pain, what we call the pain generators. We need to identify them, and they're often more than one. But that's part of the fun, in my opinion, is kind of sleuthing this out and figuring out, okay, you've got back pain. And figuring that out. And sometimes it takes several visits, not one visit. I tell people up at, look, this is not like you pop in and we give you a prescription, an antibiotic, and that doesn't work that way. It's a little more of a process. But and the toolbox comes into play. We've got everything from very simple injections, treatments, to more invasive, depending on, what we call the continuum of care. Simple things. If somebody comes in and they were gardening and have a backache, we don't like, okay, that's not a situation.
Yeah.
A chronic pain, generally 3 months or longer, and it's impacting their quality of life, their activities of daily living. That's when we start getting involved. And most of them already tried the, physical therapy. They've tried chiropractic. They've tried what I call the hands-on stuff. They're not getting better or maybe getting worse. So that's when it's time to intervene and come up with a good diagnosis and a treatment plan. And the toolbox, it's kind of hard to go, but we've got every very simple things to, the latest and greatest. We mentioned stem cell therapy.
Oh, of course.
Which is a big piece of the toolbox, but it's not the only piece. And it's got to be given in context. Like we said earlier this morning, it's not pixie dust. It has to be used with, used judiciously and appropriately. And you got to maximize the chance of success for that. And there's other things going on. We talked about Dr. Mixon, in fact, he had hip pain and probably has a little component of lumbar issues that may be contributing.
Probably do. Yeah.
So there's an overlay and this kind of peeling back the layers of the onion, which I find fun. I enjoy that piece of it and kind of explain to patients, okay, here's what's going on. Here's your story. Here's what I see. Here's the images. So I think, we have a working diagnosis or two or three, and then parsing that out. I just enjoy doing that.
Well, and this is a classic thing. We talked about it briefly this morning around 8:30, but I'm going to bring it up again. It's kind of funny now because I know you so well now over these last 4 or 5 years, and you've helped me so dramatically. In fact, I want Jerry, you to tell your story. I'm tired of telling mine, even though I'm proud to tell it. Happy to.
I'm always happy to hear it.
Well, okay. The bottom line is, though, what's so funny, I could be golfing or I'm at church or what have you, socializing, and people seem to get a kick out of saying, yeah, I have bone on bone. My doctor says I have bone on bone, and people almost are proud of saying, because it's so dramatic,
right.
I have bone on bone. But it always kind of I have to bite my tongue because of what you call the Bob syndrome.
Yeah.
Bob syndrome, bone on bone, when in reality that really is not always the case.
Right. It's oversimplified in a number of ways. And we see these patients been told they're bone on bone. We sometimes repeat the x-rays or the MRI, and sometimes they're frankly not bone on bone, but also it's oversimplistic. It gives a mechanistic explanation for a problem that's really not that. This is more of a biochemical problem with chronic inflammation. And if we can change the environment inside the joint, for a knee example,
yeah,
that we can dramatically change the symptoms. So improve, you know, reduce the pain, improve the function without major surgery, but in many cases.
But surgeons love to use the term because it really does kind of lock in the sale, you might say. It impresses the patient, and the patient is able to go away saying, oh my, look at me, I have bone on bone, better have that knee replaced. But it is a phrase that sells an awful lot of artificial knees.
Well, absolutely.
It's effective.
And I would also say the MRI, you know, people... The MRI is a great tool, but also it's a bit of a what I would call a search and destroy. So a friend of mine wanted a shoulder MRI, and I said, okay. And he's about 5 years younger than me. I said, okay. I got the x-rays. I got a good idea of what's going on. But, if you really want the MRI, we'll order it. And I already knew in my mind what the MRI was going to find. It's going to find, oh, he's got a, you know, partial rotator cuff tear, he's got some glenohumeral arthritis, he's got this and that. Basically, it's the laundry list. And that laundry list is kind of like a, I would call a free fire zone for many surgeons to go in and fix all these things that may or may not have any clinical significance. And this is not a orthopedic surgeon bashing contest. That's not what the purpose is. The purpose is, I always tell patients, really, we don't treat x-rays or MRIs. We treat the patient. It's really important to treat what is causing your pain rather than, well, I see this in the MRI, so we should go fix that. There's a lot of problems with that whole outlook. And I've seen it firsthand as a pain specialist. Unfortunately, I will say, and we talked earlier about referral bias. I suffer from referral bias because I'm a pain specialist. In my opinion, nobody should have back surgery or orthopedic surgery. That I'm making an extreme example to make a point that when surgeries don't go well, they often end up in my office.
Yeah, but here's the problem. According to another pain guy, he said, and tell me if this may be accurate or not, he said the latest research said that only 27% of back surgeries, first-time back surgeries, are successful.
Yeah.
27% are successful. So when you are told, well, maybe we better do surgery, holy cow, what a great time for a second opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell this to patients all the time. We have, so where I'm at ProOrtho, we have three excellent orthopedic spine surgeons. And I tell my patients, my job is to keep you away from them.
Yes.
I do. And they know that. I mean, I joke about it, but I say, on the flip side of that is when I do refer them for surgery,
they need it. We've tried it.
We've given them the full court press, and you know, we don't always win that battle.
Okay, but. Jerry,
yes, sir.
The audience probably, if they've listened at all over the years, know that because of stem cell therapy, my low back literally, I almost used the term, saved my life. That's not true, of course, but
you weren't going to die from it. You were miserable.
It saved my lifestyle. You know, couldn't put on my, couldn't bend over, couldn't golf, couldn't sleep more than about 2.5 hours, and I drove my wife crazy because I'd have to get up and walk
around. I was going to say, Vicky probably suffered as much as
anybody.
Well,
really. I mean, it irritated her in a loving sort of a sad way.
Of course.
And the specialists all around town told me nothing I could do about it until I ran into you. But, Jerry, you're not exactly a big-time baby. But you're as masculine and as healthy as I've known anybody to be at 73. But you've wound up seeing him. Why don't you explain?
Well, as I was explaining earlier today when we weren't on the air.
Yeah, I thought you were.
It was a dress rehearsal.
It was a dress rehearsal, that's right. I have always used my body heavily. Everything from soldiering for a few years and getting shot, stabbed, blown up, and everything else. And about 21, 22 years ago, I was glacier skiing, and I made a foolish mistake. I was skiing down the mountain like a bat out of hell, and I turned around to look behind me to see if anyone was catching me or not, being a fiercely competitive person my whole life. And I hit the ice going, I have no idea how fast.
Was this Whistler Blackcomb?
Too fast,
Blackcomb?
Yes.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. I know that run.
So I hit it, and I hit really hard on my left side, and I suffered what's called a subcapital fracture. It was basically the femur, the main bone in your thigh, has a big ball on the end that fits up in the socket. And I sheared that right off. I just broke it off completely. And that happened about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, last run of the day, of course.
Of course. Yeah.
When you're tiredest and least cautious. And 2 o'clock in the morning, I was in surgery on Tuesday morning getting this.
Needless to say, you got the toboggan ride down.
I got the toboggan ride, and yeah. And then two ambulance rides, one to the local clinic where they said, oh, my God, and then down to Vancouver where they put things back together. But I've healed it, and I've used that that leg and that hip aggressively for 22 years. I run and jump and leap and cavort and ski and do all sorts of stuff with it. And it never bothered me really until recently, and I started getting these odd pains with it, starting in my buttock and around the hip, and then anterior into the groin area. And so I came and saw you, and we got some MRIs, and it turns out that indeed, you see the old fracture. There's a small area of osteonecrosis where part of the bone had died. There's a newer area of inflammation with some swelling, reactive swelling in the tissues. Also identified some lower back degenerative changes down, L4, 5, S1 sort of region. And so you said, well, let's see if we can heal some of this up. And you took some stem cells out of my pelvis, which was really a minimal procedure. When we used to take bone marrow out of people when I was a resident 45 years ago, it was a bigger whoop-de-doo. We took it out of the sternum in those days. We just stick them right in the chest and we'd suck out some stuff. And it hurt. They said unkind things about our ancestry on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You caused me no pain whatsoever. Use a little spray to numb up the skin, a little shot, and then, I could feel things pushing and pulling, but nothing really bad.
Yeah, I felt the pressure of you doing what you did, but there was zero pain.
Yeah.
Zero pain.
And then I lay around for 15, 20 minutes while they were processing the stem cells, and he came in and with some fluoroscopic control, injected some stem cells into my hip. Now that was about 4 weeks ago. I've been a little concerned about this because I know the numbers. Right. You get 70-80% repair of shoulders and knees and so on. Hips, it's only 50-60% repair because the cartilage and the blood supply to the hip is very different. And with my old fracture and some area of the bone that had already died, who knows? But it's only been 4 weeks, and I do have improved situation. The anterior, the groin pain and stuff is completely cleared.
Oh, good.
The resting hip pain is gone. I still have some discomfort when I climb stairs a bit, but it's certainly doable and doesn't stop me. I ski on it just fine, having a good time. So I come back in about 2 weeks. You're going to put some PRP in.
A little booster, yeah.
Yeah, PRP just to
booster.
Kind of to nourish those stem cells that still survive and help them have a little longer life. Statistically, 4 to 6 months, I'll know what kind of results I'm going to get.
Pretty good idea then.
And if I still have questions, I will come back and have you do it again.
Right.
Now, I just love hearing these stories. You just mentioned PRP. Can we just, for a moment, talk about PRP, and tell me if I'm right. Platelet-rich plasma, you take a person's blood, their own blood, spin it down, get rid of the red and the white
cells.
Blood cells and all of that, And the platelets, each platelet, if I remember you correctly, Jerry, has 9 different growth factors. Mm-hmm. And so what you do...
He's actually learning.
He's learning.
I'm teaching him some medicine. It's taken me 22 years. But, so it is, you call that, to be humorous or clever or what have you, you call that like a little fertilizer.
Kind of like a fertilizer, especially, I think that's appropriate. You know, when I try to make it kind of accessible to the average guy on the street, it's the stem cells are like the seeds and the PRP is kind of like the fertilizer. Obviously, overgeneralizing, but I think it's okay. And the nice thing about the PRP, and sometimes we'll do PRP like Pete, we did on your knee. I said, you know, I think the PRP for your knee will be fine. And this comes in a context of what we call orthobiologics. We got a wide range. It's not just stem cell and PRP. We got this whole, you know, menu, if you will. And some of them, you know, even hyaluronic acid, which has been around for a while.
Absolutely.
Sometimes that's appropriate.
And it's a good lubricant.
It is a very good lubricant. Now, stem cell, I would say, is probably the, you know, that's kind of the ultimate. But there's patients who I say, look, you know, let's just try like a little Synvisc injection first or something like that for your knee pain. A lot of these things are, you know, so going back to the toolbox, probably majority, 90% is covered by insurance.
What I would like the audience to know, this is so critical. It relates back to the golden rule, quite frankly, because when I went in for my knee, you've helped me with my neck now. You've helped me with my low back. You've helped me with shoulders and my right knee. My point is, I went in, I was positive I was going to have to pay for stem cell therapy. It's not the end of the world. I would have done it in a heartbeat. But you said, well, you know, you thought that maybe just PRP for a fraction of the cost, less than $1,000, I think you only charge $750. The few competitors that you have, they charge some of them nearly twice as much. You think the PRP would do it. And I was almost disappointed. I know that sounds silly because I thought, hey, stem cell.
He wants the good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, why do that? You would have made far more money. But you said, well, let's just do the PRP. And, 30 minutes later, I was out the door. You did the blood and put the knee in there, put it in my knee. And I went from a maximum capability of 4,000 steps a day to at least 20. I can do 20, 22,000 before there's any problem. And that was a life changer for me because walking was a big part of my new regimen. I'm dropping a few pounds and stuff. I need to stay active. Mm-hmm. It's a matter, I wouldn't say life or death.
I would.
It's important. I have to stay active.
I know your cardiac history.
Yes,
it is life or death. Lose the weight and keep moving.
That's right.
Well, if there's one take-home lesson from this whole COVID thing, it's mobility is pretty critical for overall
health, including
your immune status. Dr. Nixon, you agree?
Absolutely. No, it is. People don't realize exercise is not just about weight and muscle. Exercise is about immune response. Let me give you a totally off topic, except about exercise. A woman who gets breast cancer and has a sedentary lifestyle will die 25% more often than a woman who gets the same cancer and exercises regularly.
Wow. Say that again.
If you're a woman and you get breast cancer and you go out and just take up a new exercise program, maybe you never exercised before. Taking up a new exercise program with your new diagnosis of an invasive breast cancer improves your survival by 25%. Exercise boosts our immune response and helps us kill cancer. It helps us to open up our arteries, to provide better blood supply to our hearts and our brains. It lowers the risk of dementia. It helps prevent osteoporosis.
Just going to say the article today in the Wall Street Journal about cognitive issues, including dementia, and the exercise and being socially engaged and exercise is a key piece.
Okay,
it's critical.
For all of you folks that are out there listening that have not had the discipline to proceed or you've procrastinated, whatever the case may be, here's my question, Jerry. You run 3-4 miles every day. You pump iron. You're a madman. Well, I've never run in my life other than in high school and stuff, basketball and things like that. I am not a runner. I hate running. But I love walking. I go on now 2-hour walks, but I have my earbuds and my phone, and I do. I work.
Yeah.
But I don't run.
Well, the last 2 months, I don't either with my hip.
Well, I know, but here's my point.
Hopefully that'll change.
The walking, and I come back and I'm sweaty, and but I'm not dripping like a mad, like I'm sure you are when you're done.
I run a, I leave a trail of sweat.
That's right.
It's kind of like you see the snail and the slime. Okay. With me, it's sweat.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is just walking, and I'm not speed walking, but I'm walking. Huh. I'm walking, but that's helpful.
That's helpful. Yeah. Any exercise is better than no exercise. Moderate exercise is more efficient and better for you than mild exercise. And intense exercise is better for you than mild or moderate exercise.
Okay.
The harder you work your muscles and the longer and more frequently you work your muscles, the more we call them myokines, muscle-derived hormones, enzymes, peptides, those muscles produce. Working muscle is an active gland. It produces more than 100 different growth factors. It kicks out big doses of brain-derived neurotrophic factors to grow new brain tissue, to help your peripheral neuropathies. Okay, so yes, exercise, our bodies are designed to be used.
So I just bought, it's being delivered this next week, a new elliptical machine for our home. I'm doing weights and different things like that. What I'm saying, though, these are all doable things. This doesn't mean I have to turn into an Arnold Schwarzenegger and work out 8 hours a day.
No.
But it is a life-saving, it is a health prevention, it's a whole lot of things that can improve quality of
life. Look, you talk about, you know, weightlifting and stuff that I do. I don't do a lot, really. My resistance training, I get up in the morning, I shave. I knock out 50 to 55 push-ups when I finish my shaving before I get my clothes on. And I get dressed and I go out to breakfast. If it's a day that I don't have to get to the office early, I go out and I walk. And I walk briskly right now just because I'm still healing this injured hip. But, you know, I'll walk 45 minutes at a brisk rate, and I come home and head off to work. In my office, I have a set of 45-pound dumbbells on the windowsill.
Man, those suckers are heavy. I'm dealing with 15s right now. 40-pound, gee.
Yeah, but, you know, they sit on my window. So if I'm sitting at my computer, as I do for hours and hours, when I get foggy brain, I just... my eyes are starting to glaze, and I'm, you know, I get up, I walk over to the windowsill, I grab those weights in each hand, and I do some curls and some overhead presses until my heart rate is up, and I'm puffing and panting a bit, and I put the weights down, I sit down at the computer, and I work some more.
All right.
And the next time, if I get foggy headed from just sitting and reading, I drop down behind the couch, and I knock out a bunch of push-ups again.
Right.
And I sit down. Resistance training can be done in 1-minute bursts.
Right. No, and there's a lot of research that show that these short intervals have a lot of benefit.
They do.
You know, I tell people, look, give me 5 minutes, you know, 2 or 3 times a day of, you know, fairly intense exercise.
Yes.
The benefit of that is, I think, beyond question. I think the research, recent research has just shown just tons of benefit.
Well, we've been
And I've got a floor and a windowsill. Those are my exercise workouts.
And I like the bands, you know, that we provide.
Resistance bands are great.
Yes,
I'm using those. Well, we've gone down, well, it's been a good rabbit trail, a life-producing rabbit trail here. But, again, just to come back briefly, we're going to go to Kathy in, like, 30 seconds. I just want to remind everybody, though, the point we're trying to make and the reason we bring Dan in, pain is usually referred to as the number one reason people go to a doctor. And so if you're struggling, especially with chronic pain, I think you defined that with pain that's affecting your lifestyle for 3 months or more.
3 months is kind of the, different definitions, but 3 months is
good. But a lot of you folks are struggling out there. You've had a bad elbow, a shoulder, a neck, a hip, a foot, a knee, what have you, for some of you for years, like I went on for years until I ran into Dan. And you need to go to somebody that understands the importance of proper measurement and diagnosis without one solution, without just one tool in this toolbox. That is critical, critical, critical for you. And that's who you can, that's what you get when you go to Dan Nelson at Pro Ortho. Here's his number. Make an appointment. I suggest you do that. He is in Kirkland, Pro Ortho in Kirkland, 425-636-4442. That's 425-636-4442. Do yourself a monster favor and do that. Please do that. Because of all of our, we had so many technical problems, not on this station, 570 KVI has just been great, but we've held off on some calls, at least recently. So let's go to Kathy real quickly in Renton. Kathy, welcome to the show. Kathy, are you there? Okay. I was told she was. If Kathy is not there, we could go to Grace. Is Grace available?
I'm still here.
Who's here? Hello. Who are you? This is Grace.
Hello, Grace. You're on the air.
Hey, Grace. Thank you for your patience. You are a sweetheart for being so patient. But you're on. We've got Dr. Dan Nelson and Dr. Jerry Mixon.
How can we help you, young lady?
Oh, okay. I have many problems. I'm just getting old, I say. But my main problem that I'm having now, several years ago, I was diagnosed as having peripheral neuropathy. I just figured I had done, we were dancers at one time. In fact, we taught line dancing. And I figured I just had done, I injured the nerves in my feet. I didn't, but then when they said, he tried all kinds of things and he said, no, I think you have peripheral neuropathy. And that was the end of it. Okay, it was not severe. I said, it was something I lived with. But then, as a teenager, I was very foolish about doing too much sunning. You know, and that was before sunscreen, and they kept telling you the sun is, you know, is great for you. Well, I did too much. So therefore, I have been battling skin cancer for many years. And right now, I'm trying to heal two of them that came out on my ankle. All right, I've been having electrical shocks through that foot with the neuropathy. And now with open wounds with the skin cancer, it is not fun. I go to a doctor, and the minute they hear the word neuropathy, which at one time I was told I had, it's like they shut off their brain. Oh, well, we just won't talk about that. And so my question is there anything that can help neuropathy to stop these electrical shocks that I get through my leg and my feet?
Well, the short answer is
story.
Yeah, well, it's a challenging situation, Grace, but there is hope. Now, I don't know what, presumably it's idiopathic neuropathy, meaning we don't understand what the cause is. I mean, if you were diabetic, we'd say diabetic neuropathy, but I don't think you have that going on. So,
no, I'm not diabetic.
Yeah. So it's a vexing problem in many patients, older patients in particular. And you're absolutely right. Most doctors just kind of like, when you tell them you have neuropathy, they change the subject. It's kind of like spinal stenosis.
Yeah,
just like
right.
They just change the subject.
Yeah.
So, but there are things we can do. Now, it's a challenging situation. We offer, sometimes we'll start out just doing very simple diagnostic nerve blocks because we want to see what your response is if we do an injection. Not that we jump to, you know, sticking a needle in initially, but it's helpful for us to know what your response is to a diagnostic injection, because there's actually things that let's pick a number. 50% of those patients, we can actually improve their lives. Now, we probably overuse the word toolbox, but we have a lot of tools in the toolbox, even for neuropathy. And it's just, I can't tell you, on the radio what it would take to help you. And many times it's taking a patient from being miserable to manageable. You know, we're not talking about, in many cases, maybe not a cure, but what can we do to make things better for you, to make give you quality of life, keep up your activities, the daily living. You know, the ulcers and the healing situation, that's a challenge too. But I would submit that if we can improve your activity level, improve the circulation, improve your exercise tolerance, although that's only going to do you, that's only going to pay dividends down the road.
Well, and it sounds like her neuropathy started fairly young in life.
Right.
This has been going on for quite a while. Is that true?
Yes. Yes, that's true.
You know, which in many respects makes it tougher.
It was,
for sure.
It was probably about 10 years ago that they first, the first doctor says, like, he says, well, I think you've got peripheral neuropathy. And that was just like he closed the door right there.
Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. Let me tell you something that might help. And I certainly can't swear to it. The only studies I've seen on this are actually with diabetic neuropathies. But it was some European studies back in the 90s, early 2000s, in which they used high-dose alpha-lipoic acid as an oral supplement. And by high dose, I mean somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000 to 2,500 milligrams a day. So, you know, you're talking about three times a day at least dosing. But about 30% of diabetic neuropathies had a significant improvement with the high-dose alpha-lipoic acid. The theory is that it improved the microcirculation, the blood supply in those tiny, tiny terminal arterioles that nourish the nerves and gave the nerves a chance to heal. That's the theory about how it
And they're
works.
The tiniest because they're so...
They're so skinny that only one red cell at a time goes through those vessels. They go through in single file.
Right.
But it provides the oxygenation and the nutrition for the nerve fibers. And the alpha-lipoic acid makes the lining, we call it the endothelium, that lining of those little arteries, much smoother. And the blood will flow through it much more efficiently. And by improving the blood flow in that microcirculation to the nerves, about 30% of these diabetics got significant improvement in their peripheral neuropathy.
Gotcha.
Okay, now that's 7 out of 10. It didn't help. So, yeah.
What, Dr. Mixon, what about insulin resistance, which is a big deal? And have you seen in your clinics patients who were borderline, maybe were getting neuropathy, and you corrected that situation?
You know what? We see peripheral neuropathy in pre-diabetics.
Right.
We see peripheral neuropathy developing 10, 15 years before the person becomes an overt diabetic.
Yeah. Right, right.
So the damage is being done long before the diagnosis of diabetes. As the insulin resistance is rising, the average sugar levels are rising, glycosylation of the arterial endothelium is being done, and you're getting a lot more damage done. So, yes, it's not all or nothing. You don't say, oh, I've got healthy vessels until I become a diabetic. That it just means that as those sugars are rising towards diabetes, a decade in advance, you're doing damage.
Right.
And you can see peripheral neuropathy beginning long before a person.
And we only have about a minute or two left, so we've got to wrap this up.
Yeah, yeah.
What can you tell her?
Could you spell that for me, that acid?
Alpha, A-L-P-H-A, lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid, A-C-I-D. Now, the thing, alpha-lipoic acid, remember that word acid? When you take this stuff, take it midway in a meal. Okay, eat some, take your pills, eat some more. If that stuff refluxes back up your esophagus, you're going to think you're dying of a heart attack.
All right. So,
I have reflux too, so.
Yeah, make sure you take it buffered by a food.
Then. And with that, we just have to say goodbye, Grace, but thank you again for your patience. You waited a long time to get on. Hopefully that has been helpful. I'm assuming with peripheral neuropathy, you basically hear about it fingers and feet, right?
Fingers and feet.
I mean, you don't hear it about your tummy or your butt or anything.
Well, it's periphery. It's out on the outer edges.
Edges.
The smallest vessels, the furthest away from your heart.
Got it.
That's where it hits you.
Got it. And with that, Dan Nelson, man, I'm glad you came in twice today.
Yeah.
And we are glad you did that. Your clinic is in Totem Lake? with Pro Ortho, which is part of the Pro Alliance sort of umbrella of surgeons and physicians and what have you. Totem Lake is easy to get to, folks, and so if you would like to make an appointment with someone who has a large toolbox with a 30-year experience in pain, you really need to see this guy. There's a very good reason. Don't go to a one-trick pony. Just don't. Just trust me. Don't. I've been to a dozen one-trick ponies and was very disappointed and very happy. And you've heard Jerry's story today and so many others. To make an appointment, see the diagnosis, what Jerry says, if you don't measure, you don't know. The diagnosis, absolutely critical.
Well, and you forget the other one. First diagnosis, then
yes.
therapy.
Yes,
if
yes,
you
yes.
don't know for exactly what you're treating, the chances of treating it well really suck.
And here's how you make an appointment. 425-636-4442. Easy. Write it down. 425-636-4442. You can even leave a message right now. Call the number right now. I'm kidding you. Not kidding you. Don't procrastinate, because if you procrastinate and you say, well, I'll call them Monday, you might forget. Call now. Follow that instinct to solve the problem by first defining it. 425-636-4442. Dan, thank you much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Another great hour.
Yeah.
Hopefully a few more people heard this one.
Yeah, our KVI audience is
We're
going
to have to do some video things and put them on Facebook just for fun.
Oh, I think that would be fun. Okay. I would enjoy that immensely.
And with for those of you who have been blessed by this show, remember it's called Leading Edge Medicine. There is no better example of Leading Edge Medicine than Longevity Medical Clinics. Folks, prevention, building your immune system. There has never, ever, ever been a better time to make a free health analysis appointment. Two free tests, you get $100 of free longevity supplements, and you make your own appointment on our website, lmclinic.com. It's easy to do, lmclinic.com. We don't have any appointments right now in the last week of March, but we do have some in the first 3 weeks. Grab one at lmclinic.com. You can even make one by calling 866-86-YOUNG. See you next weekend.